All right, get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that holodeck listeners would love and cherish. And that's our $3 tier and our $5 tier, each of which offers you more Star Trek from the holodeck discussions, behind the scenes, bonus shows, pre-shows, additional podcast discussions. We get into all of it. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head to patreon.com/RainmanDigital and pledge. It's the only way we can stay on the air, especially in this day and age where everyone has a podcast. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest. A lot of celebrity podcasts, a lot of them are shitty, let's be honest.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But they're clogging up those algorithms, and it's harder to be seen. So please, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital.
Warning, Star Trek from the holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire!
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now!
All right, hello, welcome everyone to Star Trek from the holodeck, the Discovery Edition. I'm cruising at a nice 9.9 warp. Is that how you say that, Dave?
I think if we were going 9.9, I think we'd be like seeing a giant alien head staring at us.
All right, well, how about 9.2?
That's a little bit more.
All right.
More safe.
So today, Dave, you and I are going to be discussing Season 3, Episode 8, titled The Sanctuary. And we have a lot to talk about once again. This series is really shaping up to be pretty fucking fantastic.
It is.
Dave, 8 episodes in, we're barely halfway through. And look at everything that has transpired. And yet nothing feels like it's falling away.
Nope. There's actual purpose.
You know, sometimes when you pack that wagon too tight, things start falling off the back.
Yeah.
It's not happening here. Like, everything's fully strapped down. They got those little straps tight with the little fucking wrenches. Nothing's falling off this bad boy, Dave. Not yet. We still have several episodes to go to say that it's 100% a success. But so far, everything's looking really good.
And honestly, dude, I think Michelle Paradise, who I believe is the showrunner.
I'm going to make love to her.
She is
Can I send sex messages on Twitter? What's it called? Sexter?
Sexter.
Sexter. Hashtag have sex with me.
But she is really proving to be a fine showrunner.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, like, I'm going to be interested if she, I hope she continues on into the next season.
Oh, come on, Dave. She's got to.
But, you know, she has to. But you just don't know. I mean, especially since we've been jumping showrunners season to season to season.
Yeah.
So
I think they've got everything kind of set and squared away now.
I'm hoping.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that they do, because Michelle Paradise is proving that, honestly, she is a very capable showrunner.
She's holding down.
She's holding down that ship.
Yeah. So we do have a lot to talk about. Saru is trying to come up with his own catchphrase. The writers having a bit of fun, kind of breaking the fourth wall a bit, playing with how the different captains give orders.
Yeah.
I mean, his so far is what I like that Tilly had like a consensus. I'm like, hey, so far we have execute, hit it, and manifest.
And manifest.
I like how that's her first job as number one. Help me figure out a catchphrase. And that was like, fun, though. I mean, it does bring the levity to Star Trek, especially when you're dealing with a show that's, for the most part, steeped in some heavy, like, drama.
Yeah.
And especially this season, there's a lot going on. It's not as dark in terms of content as previous seasons, but it doesn't mean it's not as substance-filled.
Yeah.
And so having those moments, Dave, with Tilly, and she always does such a great job, that character, bringing levity. It does work.
She's the heart of the show, honestly. Tilly is the heart of the show.
Yeah.
And being the heart, it's really important to actually keep that levity. I mean, if you go back to even the original series had serious moments, but then it had interspliced with these like moments of levity
where
you get to see the crew be together.
All Star Trek always had those moments.
And that's the one thing that a lot of people have been saying that Discovery has been missing, because season one and season two were a bit more darker, a bit more edgier. They focused on the mystery, like what me and you were talking about. But they tried to bring a different tone to the Star Trek.
Yeah. But even with those seasons, you still had Tilly. Tilly was still the levity.
And she was still the levity. And in this one, they just basically confirmed the importance of that character, because in season one and season two, she was more or less, I would say that Tilly was being seen as the sidekick type character, the type of character that basically is not a major focus for the show. But in season three, it's obvious how important that character is now, because she's the heart of the show. She's the one that actually gives us that
She's the emotional window. Nexus, in my opinion. Like, I know the show is Burnham. It is. It's her show.
But Tilly is the window to see what the crew is, who the crew is. And, like, she's the one that basically knows how everyone is feeling, how everyone's doing. And we see it through her actions.
Well, that's what we said last episode. We said that that's why it makes sense for her to be number one.
Exactly.
Yeah. She interacts with everyone. She has great rapport with everyone. And it just it works on multiple levels. But yeah, I love everything they do with her. I honestly think she is. She's a very important character. And in years to come, we always have those go-to characters in Star Trek. We always have, you know, Next Generation has Picard and Data. Those were always the characters that, for the most part, the fans gravitated to. And Deep Space Nine, we had a true ensemble cast. You know, we gravitated to all of them.
All of them, pretty much.
You know, Enterprise was Tucker and T'Pol, for the most part. And Archer.
No, but it was more Tucker and T'Pol toward the end.
Yeah. Of course, the original series, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, we always had those characters. Voyager, Janeway, and Seven of Nine. And with Discovery, years down the road, it's going to be Saru, Tilly, and Burnham.
Yeah.
It already is.
It already is at this point in this season.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just how it is. So let's talk about Georgiou. Let's tackle this. The issues pertaining to Georgiou have been brought back to the forefront. This is a character that I deeply enjoy watching on screen, because deep down, she's very complicated. Because deep down, she appears to be a decent person, but her way of life within the Terran Empire has forged her into believing she cannot show weakness and or vulnerability of any kind. Her default mode, as we saw within the opening minutes, is much like a wounded animal. You're going to bite anything that might threaten you.
Yeah.
That's why she snaps. Also, it's a bit of she's overcompensating. She is in protection mode. She doesn't want to see people. She doesn't want people to see her as weak. And that's why she acts the way she does, especially as we saw with the Good Doctor this episode. As I said, she's a complicated character. She comes off like she's afraid to become weak, almost as if she can only trust in herself, which is the Terran way.
Yes.
And that's something that I really like about the writing of this show, is they never lose sight of this person's background.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to let certain things go. It's one of my biggest problems, even though I loved Voyager, it's one of my biggest problems with Voyager. You had a ship full of terrorists. The Maquis. They're terrorists.
Yeah.
Chakotay being one, who ends up being the number one of Voyager. And those terrorist vibes never really came through. He just kind of immediately just became the captain's boy. And sure, there was a few moments where him and Janeway would butt heads, but for the most part, he became a Starfleet officer.
Exactly.
His Maquis ways never really interfered in anything over the course of 7 years. It never really played a part in any of his decisions. And with Georgiou, they're way more consistent realistically.
Yeah.
She was born within the Terran Empire.
this is something that's never going to change. She's always going to have this be a part of her. And sure, we're going to see moments where she's a decent person, but she's always going to revert to the Terran ways, because that's what she knows. That's how she was raised. That's all she knows.
And I like the fact that they've been keeping that thematic continuity with Georgiou, basically showing that the Terran way is, if you show any sign of weakness or vulnerability,
you're dead.
The next person behind you is allowed to kill you.
Yeah.
And that would cause great fear and paranoia in anybody.
And that's exactly what we see in her.
Exactly. And I really like the fact the person that she has to play off of in this episode is Culber. Because Culber is the polar opposite of the Terran way. Culber is, is the perfect foil for Georgiou in this episode, because like Culber is the doctor that needs to help everybody. If you show a sign of weakness, he's automatically already there because he's so empathic.
Yeah.
And me and you have discussed about it. The strength of his character,
he's good
this season, is the fact that he is a throwback to the good themes of Troy from TNG, a character who is empathic to all the crew, who understands them and is essentially a healer. And for Culber, seeing Georgiou go through this makes him want to actually find out more.
He's a doctor.
He doesn't give up.
Yeah.
He doesn't give up because he's so empathic. He knows Georgiou's in pain. He needs to dig in and see why. And of course, for Georgiou, that's the worst case scenario, because her Terran brain is telling her, if he finds out, he's just going to kill me.
Exactly. You can't change the way you were raised.
Change just, the way
it's
you were.
Too embedded when you're raised around a certain set of ideology. And that's why I love this character, because she's so consistent. She's so complicated. And I'd also say that she's not necessarily evil. If this was two seasons ago, yeah, she's evil. But as we know, she's going to be a lead in her own show. And they got a lot of work to do to justify why she's going to be the lead of a show. And you're starting to see the many layers to this person. She's a product of her cultural upbringing.
That's the key phrase there. She's a product.
She's a product of her cultural upbringing. Are you evil if a certain way of life is all you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's definitely a philosophical angle here. Morals and ethics are unique to cultural upbringing. For the most part, our society frowns on killing, vengeance, etc. But if you were part of a society where these things were not just accepted but encouraged, are you evil? Or are you just doing what's expected of you? You're just doing what you have been taught, what's been embedded within your culture.
The natural order.
This is why I love this character. There's just so much you can do with her. And of course, anytime you can use a character and her story arc as a way to pose philosophical thought, then by all means, please do. This is Star Trek. That's what you do. So the writers are also getting us ready to explain what her issues are. If you listen carefully, David, I don't know if you caught this, but if you listen carefully to what Culbert said when addressing her medical dilemma, is it physiological, is it psychological, temporal, or interdimensional? Those last two.
Yes.
Those last two words are no doubt the direction they're going with. But let's be honest. Physiological and psychological, it would be a little boring at this point.
It would be. It'd be too on the nose.
If we want to talk about psychological, then we use Detmer for that at this point.
Exactly. That's more psychological. That's dealing with trauma of like PTSD.
Exactly. So these last two words are what we need to focus on. It's been our theory since she first started having problems that it would be linked to that rift between the universes growing so far apart. You and I had said, well, why would they make it a point to drop that bit of information on us? Why do you have the alleged Section 31 boss tell Georgiou of the rift between the universes, unless it's going to mean something? Then shortly after, we see that she's having problems with her body, that things are happening to her. What did we say? We said, well, it has to be the rift. It has to be something pertaining to to the time travel and the gap between the universes. Perhaps it is linked to how fast she traveled in time and so far away from her universe. Alex Kurtzman said in an interview, Dave, not too long ago, he says, as of now, when it comes to the movies, with the CBS and Viacom merging, the two properties have been reunited. And it was mentioned about the blending of the two and it would eventually happen. Over the past 2 years, they officially rebranded Star Trek as a whole to the Star Trek universe. You can't claim lordship over the Star Trek universe without a plan that involves the movies. You just can't do that. Trek has been doing connected universe stories long before Marvel. If anything, Marvel copied Trek's playbook. So we know, based on interviews with Kurtzman, that there are plans. Now, he's not in charge, per se, of the movies right now, because, as we had said, this season was probably being written while the merger was happening. So why would you risk, you know, doing something if a merger falls through? Are we going to have direct connections to the Kelvin timeline? No, but I have a feeling that this rift here is going to start explaining the Kelvin timeline.
I think so too. Me and you, you're on the same boat as I am, where I honestly think we're finally going to get one of the greatest mysteries in Star Trek that since me and you have started, they have to explain it.
It's 2009.
Yeah.
2009, we have been talking about how they're going to eventually.
How are they going to eventually explain this?
Yeah, in the prime timeline, if we'll ever see it. And this is the best opportunity to do so. Now, to strengthen that idea without spoilers.
Yes.
There was a Ready Room discussion with Will Wheaton recently, where they were talking about the upcoming episode, and it does, in fact, look like our theories on this connection to the Kelvin timeline will end up being a thing. That it will be connected.
Yes.
And that Georgiou's problems are, in fact, linked to the interdimensional rift.
I just wonder if, I remember me and you, when we first discussed the mirror universe and the science behind it in Star Trek, me and you discussed about how the idea that destiny will always try to correct itself.
Right.
And right now I'm with Georgiou and with her storyline. I'm curious to see if they go down the route that me and you have been discussing since we first started covering Star Trek. The fact that a lot of Star Trek stories, when it comes to parallel universes and time travel, they have this overall theme that destiny still finds a way of correcting itself, whether it's in the reboot Kelvin series, mm-hmm. where, you know, Pike still ends up in a wheelchair.
Right.
At the end of the day, he's still going to end up in that wheelchair.
Kirk and Spock still become best friends.
They still become the friends. Like, and then in it's one of the themes that I always picked. I picked up on it throughout the Kelvin movies that Kirk is dealing with the fact that he knows about the future and how his destiny is quote unquote set in stone. This is what he's supposed to do and how that bothers him. And I wonder if they're going to do the same thing with Georgiou, only like explain that the reason why she's so sick is because destiny is having that hand that's saying she's an anomaly. She doesn't belong here. She needs to be removed.
Yeah, I do like that aspect. I see, if this wasn't fate and destiny, I like the idea of it because we've always talked about that.
We've always talked about it.
But this is Star Trek, and a lot of it's based on science, not fate, which is a little more mysticism. Yeah, it's delving into the mysticism aspect of storytelling. I'm assuming this is going to be more of a science-based thing. They're going to explain it that in terms of Georgiou.
In terms of Georgiou.
Yeah, and I'm sure some way they'll explain how the Kelvin timeline factors in. They're not going to call it the Kelvin timeline because that's what the fans call it.
But. Exactly. But they have to make it. I don't know how they're going to actually refer to it.
Well,
and just by saying maybe they call into the incident of the Narada.
I already know how they're going to do it because I read the, or listened to the show.
I did too.
And I don't want to talk about it. And I'm
trying not to actually go there.
I only want to talk about things that they alluded to in this episode and our own thoughts and theories, but I don't want to actually get into what is going to happen because there may be people out there that don't want to hear it.
But
I don't want to spoil the episode for them.
But honestly, the next episode after this has me really excited to see what are they going to do? What is Michelle Paradise and her writing staff? How are they going to tackle this? And if they tackle it really well, dude, if they're able to do the one thing that we've been clamoring for all of Star Trek since 2009, how bad does that make Picard look?
Okay.
How bad? It's going to make them look really stupid.
I'm really happy right now, Dave. Why do you got to bring up negativity?
I have to because I just can't let go, Mike.
I know. I can just like Kirk, you can never forgive them for the death of your boy.
I can't forgive them. Let them die.
Oh, wow. What about Shaban? Let him die.
Let him die. Yeah.
So this...
my son.
Who's your son? Picard?
Yes. They took away my son.
This season, Dave, being essentially 900 and some years into the future, it is in a unique position to bring all of this together. This is probably the best choice. I know you bring up Picard, but honestly, this series here, because of where it's at, the setting, it is the best choice to bring everything together. The narrative pieces needed to accomplish this are already set in motion. Georgiou is the perfect writing device to explore that aspect and bring all of it together. All right, so I'm loving the Emerald Chain aspect so far because we are able to see a version of the Orions we've always heard about.
Yes.
Or caught glimpses of briefly. And to see them through a villainous lens, it's interesting to see them used this way. Osira, is that how you say her name?
Osira, yes.
Is an interesting foe.
Oh, yeah. She's her reveal, dude, I'm really happy with because I think she's gearing up to be a really good villain.
Yeah.
The type of villain that basically we don't ultimately, and like with any great Star Trek villain, we all want to hate them, but we also understand them. We understand where they're coming from. It's kind of like the Khan thing. We know Khan's the villain, but when you look at Khan's motivations, you can understand. I mean, he was Khan's motivations. Yes, it's out of revenge, but he was left abandoned.
Well, Star Trek movies, and we'll just compare Discovery to the Star Trek movies because they are more like films, more like the films in way of writing and maturity and tone than a typical 90s TNG era series. As we know, looking at the movies, the movie is only as good as its villain.
Yes.
That's just how it is. That way in Star Trek movies. And that's why villains are so important in this new era of Star Trek, where we have those similar themes and tones throughout an entire, you know, series order through 13, 14, 15 episodes. So having Osira, you know, mentioned early on and now bringing her to the forefront in this episode is a smart move. I would love to learn more about her. I hope she becomes a little more complicated and interesting down the road. But so far, it is fun to see this character, especially with how they used her and, you know, putting the Federation in a very awkward position. The villains of Star Trek have always been used to contrast the Federation.
Yes.
And Starfleet and the opposing ideologies. And we got a version of that in this episode. That's why the villain aspect this week worked really well Osira.
And I hate to say it, I giggled a little bit when she fed her crew, where she fed her crewmate to the trans worm.
Yeah, dude, listen, I'm sure people would be begging for a con worm instead of that thing. Please give me the con worm instead, please, please.
And I was like going, well,
can you brainwash me instead, please?
That's the thing for me. That's the sign of a good villain, is when you can make me giggle. Because like,
wait, really?
Yeah.
That's what makes a good villain for you, if you make them laugh, if they make you
laugh.
If
they make me laugh. Yeah. Wow. I hate to say it, because like, I look at Khan. I love Khan. I love General Chang. Me and you have gone and
Chang makes me Chang, laugh. He makes
Chang
me giggle.
Makes me laugh.
I get what you're saying now.
He's my favorite villain of all Star Trek, is General Chang. Osira is there. Like, I'm like that opening scene when she feeds her crewmate to the transfer, I'm like, that's almost in the vein of those type of over the top characters.
She's getting there. I mean, we'll see how she's far from being Khan.
She's far from that though. But yeah. Like she's on that path. She's on that path. She can be on that path to be there.
Right now, she's more like the Kazon. Is that that's the name of them, right?
Yeah,
from Voyager. From Voyager. The worst villains of all time. A bunch of homeless people.
She's better than
that. Hey, what's a good idea for a villain? How about a bunch of homeless people that just want water?
They just want water.
All right. So we found in this episode that the Emerald Chain is running out of dilithium, which is pretty much the reason why they've been able to control so much of the area and are a threat. Is because they're the ones with dilithium, and that's given them a way to put their thumb over the entire region. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens now that the information is out that they are going to become. Are they going to become a greater threat to the Federation because they know that the Andorian is no doubt going to share this information with them? And do they really want this information to get out? Absolutely not.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is like, it took me a second to think about it. And yeah, the information that he has is incredibly vital.
And I don't think Asira is the only threat. When she said something alluding to the fact that you guys have, I don't know, opened the door to something, there's something else out there. There's someone else involved besides just her.
Well, dude, we know from the fact that basically they've been alluding that the burn, whoever caused the burn has to be also probably a big bad villain that they're going to run into.
I don't know. I think it might be not. I don't think it's connected.
You don't think? I think it is.
I think
because you have
really want a singular threat. And I mean, I guess they could make it work. I'm not going to say it can't work. I mean, because the writers have been doing a great job this season. So it's not that they can't make it work, but it just seems a little odd to have a singular threat that started the burn that's now connected to the Emerald Chain. The Emerald Chain is small fries.
Yeah, but
like in the grand cosmic sense of Star Trek and what the burn did to the entire known galaxy.
Yeah.
To have a singular threat feels a little insincere to the massive concept of the burn.
That's why a part of me has been thinking that the Emerald Chain and Osira, they're a big bad villain, right? They're a villain.
I think they're an obstacle, Dave.
They're an obstacle.
I don't think in terms of writing, they're an obstacle. I don't think they're considered the big bad.
The big bad. Yeah. I don't consider them the big bad. I think someone's bigger than them, just like what you alluded to.
Yeah.
But I think that the big bad is actually alluded to what I think is the theme here. Everyone seems to be focused on the burn, the use of dilithium in the universe, the lack of energy resources. That's what the big bad is going to be connected to. I think that
you think it's about controlling commodity.
Yes, there has to be more. There has to be more.
Absolutely, there's more for sure.
So I think because we're still at the halfway point, I think we're still in going to see where this all leads. But I honestly feel, thematically, that's where we're leading. The big bad is tied to that.
Thematically, but what is the theme?
The theme is tied to the energy crisis, the lithium, the burn, the fact that dilithium was used as almost like a super weapon. Something like that. It's just something, because every single episode, if you look back, has touched on that.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not.
I just don't know. I can't see how yet. But I could see that basically, especially in this one, in this particular one, when they have the stuff with Osira and the Emerald Chain. And then on top of that, you have them finding the source of the music point, the nexus of where the burn was.
Yeah.
In the same episode. That has to mean something to each other if you're going to bring that, those two things in together.
Yeah. I have a feeling that the Emerald Chain is just simply a byproduct of the burn. And I don't think it's directly connected. I have a feeling that it's just more or less an obstacle that was caused by this cosmic accident.
Calamity?
Yeah, and I don't want to say accident because it was definitely, that would be very boring if it just happened. Oh, it's an accident.
Exactly. I don't want to think that it's just an accident.
Someone did it, absolutely. But I don't think Asira or the Emerald Chain is responsible. I don't even think they're fully aware of what happened. But we'll find out. I could be completely wrong. We are at the halfway point, pretty much. This did feel like a mid. If this was on traditional TV, this episode would have been the mid-season finale. Because it had that vibe. You had the allusions to the greater threat, Asira leaving, letting them know that you guys have just created a big issue between us, you know, the Federation and the Emerald Chain. So we'll get there, Dave. You could very well end up being correct. All right, get more Star Trek from the Holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. We do behind-the-scenes discussions, bonus shows, pre-shows, and additional podcasts every single month when you subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Rain Man Digital. Pledge $3 to $5 a month and gain access to more from the Holodeck. Helps us stay on the air, helps us be able to compete with those big corporate podcasts. Thank you. patreon.com/Rain Man Digital. All right, Dave. So something I keep forgetting to bring up was the melody that you had mentioned.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to know this tune, this melody. Now, as many had theorized, it's obviously a part of the burn.
It has to be.
The melody has been popping up in numerous blogs about it being connected. Obviously, it's a part of the burn. That much is very clear based on the show. There's a signal coming from a nebula that looks to be where the burn had originated. The signal sounded like a melody. But when it was stripped down, it was a Federation distress signal. So what are we thinking? The burn was started by Starfleet accidentally. Is it going to be something we know of, an element they can bring from a previous season, a deep cut from Trek canon? Is it Lorca? Is it the Cylons?
Dude, all right. Do you want me to put my tinfoil hat on now?
Sure, Dave. This is what you do best. Okay. Go ahead. Give me your tinfoil lunatic hat. Ideas.
I am going to say the burn was caused by Lorca coming over from season one. It's going to actually explain Lorca actually there. He's been part of like that moment.
That's ridiculous.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but hear me out. Hear me out. Because I was thinking this.
I think it's cute.
I think it's cute. But hear me out. Hear me out. We have yet to actually explain where Prime Lorca went.
David, he died.
But how? How did he die?
He got stabbed, I believe, and fell.
Well, no. That was the mirror Lorca that got stabbed. Prime Lorca, we don't know. We just know that mirror Lorca took over for him.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have interspaced Giorgio, suddenly the whole mirror universe aspect and the different universes are becoming part of the storyline here in season three.
Okay, Dave. So you may be onto something. I don't think it's Lorca per se, but I do think you're onto something. If you remember, it's always okay. If this was a shitty showrunner, I'd say they're going to pull something out of their ass.
They're going to pull something.
But with a group of writers like we have this season, they are dropping breadcrumbs. And yeah. If you remember, a lot of the show, there are definitely themes pertaining to the environment and taking care of the environment. That's why Book was introduced in a lot of ways. Even in this episode, what did they talk about? The empathic way you communicate with life.
With life.
That we're not going to force them to leave and go back to the sea. We're going to talk to them and convince them. Not make them, we're going to convince them and communicate it. And if you go back and look at every single episode, there has always been allusions to being green, caring about the environment. Look at the seed ship.
Yeah.
When Book first met Burnham, what did he say? He said, I would think by now people would learn about just simply ripping holes within the universe.
Yes.
Okay. Traveling into other dimensions could also be considered ripping a hole in the galaxy. Okay. We have the issue with Georgiou, right? Because this is being written by good writers, everything's going to end up circling back and connecting.
Yes.
In some way.
That's where I'm going with this.
So I have a feeling that whatever's happening to Georgiou is also at the root of the burn.
Yes.
And it has to do with the rifts in universes and possibly someone being here that should not be here. I don't want to say it was necessarily an accident, but it might have been unintentional.
Yeah, I will.
There could be outside influences. We don't know enough yet, but there are allusions to don't fuck with the environment. Don't rush in head first without knowing what you're doing.
And that's been a theme since season one.
Yeah,
don't
with
mess
with the spore drive.
The spore drive.
Yeah, right.
Don't mess with the science. Don't mess with things that you cannot control.
And we may not be voicing it clearly, so there may be some listeners who are like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? But to just simplify it, there has been a lot of allusions to not messing with things you're not supposed to mess with. Look at the temporal ban. They made it a point to say it's been banned because look at the temporal wars.
Yes.
It rained havoc on the timelines.
On the timelines.
So we'll see. We'll see where we go. It's like they have to put the genie back in the bottle, essentially.
That genie is
Lorca. Oh, and the burn could very well be connected to the events of the Kelvin timeline as well. That
then
could be
that
could be the very thing that connects it all. Is going right back to the Kelvin timeline.
And that's the thing I love about Star Trek, dude, is like you can come up with the most outlandish things and it might happen. Like people give me crap about the Q thing, but I'm sorry. TNG is very infamous. Q shows up, ding, everything's fixed. Just randomly.
David, shut up. That's awful writing. Never write again. No. You write him the card? Mike, ban your tutor?
Mike, remember, use your imagination.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, so it would be very tidy writing if they did that. The writers tie Georgiou's issues to the myth arc and keep everything connected, bringing it right back to the Kelvin timeline and the burn. That would be really fucking neat. And not neat as in cool. It would be neat, very tidy writing. Talk about keeping everything fucking just boom, streamlined.
Streamlined. And in a lesser showrunner's hands, I'd be worried. But Michelle Paradise has proven up to this point that she knows what she's doing, especially when it comes to Star Trek.
Yeah,
she knows it. She knows what she's doing. So even when any of the other Star Trek stuff that me and you have covered, I very rarely have stated I have complete faith in the producer or showrunner. But with Michelle Paradise, I have complete faith in her right
now. So far, yeah.
So even though she might go down that route, she might make it so tidy and explainable that I wouldn't be surprised she could do it.
But see how we're debating and discussing? These are all good questions. If we're not right, it's okay because there's so many things set up. You can go in any direction and make almost anything work at this point.
Yeah.
Because the writing has been so consistent and on point that it's leaving areas of interest. We're like, wow, that's interesting. We could totally do that and that would work. But also if we don't do that, this could work as well. So they're setting themselves up to go in potentially different directions. And that way, they could subvert many of the audience's expectations and give us a show that we didn't see coming, necessarily, without focusing so much on misdirecting.
Yes.
You know, so, all right. So, Stamets and Adira are forming a bond. I really like this because it helps soften those Stamets rough edges.
It does. It's amazing that just the connection with this character for Stamets and also the one engineer that me and you like, Reno.
Yeah.
His connection with that has really helped the character kind of become more fleshed out and actually much more palatable.
Yeah. As we have said, he doesn't have the most becoming character traits. He comes off as just a little arrogant sometimes.
And whiny.
And I never really dug the chemistry between him and Culbert. It just never worked. But connecting these two characters together, Stamets and Adira, in this way is saving Stamets' character for me.
It is.
It feels genuine, the relationship they have, and the two actors have great chemistry. And I'm actually excited to see where this friendship goes, because we have said before that no character is ever a lost cause. Neelix is an example of that.
Oh, easily.
Easily. In Voyager. So no character is ever a lost cause. And if you can find something that works for that character, you can end up saving an entire season sometimes. Especially when you're dealing with Stamets, who's the engineer of the ship. You gotta like him. And up to this point, I'd say up to about two or three episodes ago, I just don't really care about him. But what they're doing with him and Adira, it's endearing. And it makes him look like he cares about someone and something besides himself. Because that was our biggest issue with him, was that he came across very just completely self-consumed.
Yes.
And everything was about him. And to see him now care about Adira, it changes the way we perceive him.
Because now he seems more relatable.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
and that ultimately, that is what you need if, when it comes to Star Trek and getting to like the crew, you have to like every single individual of the crew to actually get behind them. And Stamets is the one that honestly, since season two, that just drags the crew down.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the fact that in this season, they've come in and thrown that into everyone's faces. Like, we understand that Stamets is the problem with everybody and the crew. We're going to fix it.
Okay, Dave, if we weren't right, they wouldn't be doing this with him.
Yeah, they wouldn't be doing it with
him. That's why I like these writers, because they're very in tune. They understand that they need to do... Stamets isn't ruined.
No.
All they needed to do was a little bit of course correction. Then the writers were aware. They went back and they noticed that there might be an issue with this character. Let's make him work. Let's make him be more of an independent character. Let's make both him and Culbert not solely rely on just, hey, guys, it's a gay relationship. Congratulations. I mean, at first, it just felt like, hey, we want a round of applause and a pat on the back because we gave you the first official gay relationship in Star Trek. And that's all it felt like for a couple years.
Yeah.
I'm like, listen, that's great. We have gay representation. That's awesome. I can get behind that. But also, let's do a fucking story with them.
Please.
And finally, they're doing right by both these characters and really making them work independently as characters.
Especially with Culbert, dude. Me and you have been gushing about how Culbert is becoming actually a legitimately fan favorite.
Yeah.
He's becoming a legitimate fan favorite character. And Stamets, who started since day one, it's a slow engine, a slow train. It's like, okay, come on, pick up the speed. You're lacking behind everybody.
Yeah.
Pick it up. And finally, in this episode, this is actually the first episode I can fully say Stamets is a nice dude.
Yeah.
I like him. It felt genuine.
Yeah. Yep.
And it really helped with being the opposite to Adira and having to kind of mentor her, because that's what it feels like. It's like a mentor and a student.
Right. And yeah, it works.
It worked.
Yeah, it does. Also, Dave, we had Adira. She came out as non-binary.
And you know what, dude? I'm really happy how they handled it. It wasn't in your face. It was They didn't spend like 20 minutes on it. Like I thought normally a show that wants to do an agenda would make it a 10-minute piece of the episode.
The entire episode would be written around that.
No, it was a quick scene.
No, it was perfectly handled. And I get that it's not supposed to be connected to the Trill aspect. You know, she's felt like this her whole life, right? That's what Adira said.
Yes.
But honestly, this kind of makes sense regardless when you take a look at the Trill species. The collection of memories referring to them as they, it kind of works.
It does, doesn't it? I didn't realize that till you actually brought that up, that basically, yeah, I can fully even get more behind it, because when it comes to the species that she's tied to, yeah, calling them a they, them makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I was getting confused, though, when Colbert and Stamets were talking about them and they.
And they.
I mean, that could get really convoluted and confusing. You know, imagine if, like, she was on, or they were on an away mission, and there was an emergency, and the captain is telling the transporter engineer, beam them up immediately. And the engineer's like, I only have one life sign here. Who's them? Just them. They. Beam them up. Like, there's only one. Yes, beam them up. But who?
Just do what I say.
There's only one there. No, them. I mean, that's going to get confusing.
I'd be laughing if they did a scene like that. That'd be so awesome.
Quickly, get them out of there. Who? Her? No, they.
They need to be beamed up.
That gets confusing. That's just too much for my little brain. I can't compute. Yeah, I don't understand the I don't want to get into politics. Because unfortunately, these types of things shouldn't be tied to politics. Unfortunately, in this day and age, everything becomes political. And someone's identity and how they identify or their sexual orientation should even be political, period. That's just fucking ridiculous.
It is. It is ridiculous.
I mean, gender dysphoria, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. It's not something that's made up. It's real. And we should include these types of things into TV shows. It makes sense to me, especially in a show like Star Trek. So, all right, Dave, let's take a very quick break. And then when we get back, we're going to close out this show, but we have a few more things to talk about. So we're getting close to the end here. We'll be right back.
Black alert. Black alert.
All right, get more Star Trek from the holodeck every month by subscribing to our Patreon page. There are two specific tiers that holodeck listeners would love and cherish. And that's our $3 tier and our $5 tier, each of which offers you more Star Trek from the holodeck discussions, behind the scenes, bonus shows, pre-shows, additional podcasts, discussions. We get into all of it. So if you want to help us stay on the air, please head to patreon.com/RainmanDigital and pledge. The only way we can stay on the air, especially in this day and age where everyone has a podcast. A lot of them are shitty, let's be honest. A lot of celebrity podcasts, a lot of them are shitty, let's be honest.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But they're clogging up those algorithms, and it's harder to be seen. So please, subscribe to our Patreon page, patreon.com/RainmanDigital.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her, ooh, and a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
Free shipping.
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it, no free stuff. That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. Make sure to find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Leave us reviews. Give us thumbs up. Help us out. All right, so more and more we see that many people have gotten the wrong idea about the Federation. This is another aspect I really dig this season, to the point that it seems like someone has intentionally went on a smear campaign.
Yes.
I'm wondering if that's going to be tied into the season, or possibly the Federation has done some bad things. Is there going to be a reveal that the Federation has, in fact, done things? Or are they just trying to lead us in that direction? Because now we see that the signal from the nebula where they believe the burn originated from is a Starfleet distress call.
Yes.
So are they trying to misdirect us? Do they want us to think that maybe the Federation was involved? Or is there someone purposely out there trying to make the Federation look bad so that the Federation never regains the control of the people again?
Well, you
that sounds kind of villainous, the control. They never gain the type of power they had.
They lose the positive influence that they can have on everyone,
right?
Because no one trusts them.
Nobody seems to trust them. And in fact, I loved when Tilly said that isn't a thing. When people say, "Is this the Federation deceit I've heard of?" And Tilly's all, "That's not a thing.
That's not a thing."
And she's right. We've never seen the Federation do these things. So that's another question I have. Also, we have the more logical. You know, it could be simply the fact that when the world becomes smaller, rumors and stories flourish. Tall tales. You know, people who may be disgruntled, they say something, this person repeats it, and before we know it, over the course of, you know, 300 years or 100 and some years, things become bigger than they actually are. Either way, I love how the writers are including these little vignettes each episode, highlighting how the Discovery is slowly leading by example and showing the galaxy what the Federation is really about. Even winning Book over, I thought that was a great decision in this episode. Someone that didn't want to be a part of things.
Yeah.
And yet now he's realized that the Federation does share his ideals, that their ideologies are parallel. They want to help. He wants to help. And I hope we keep learning about Book's people. The empathic way they communicate with nature is really interesting.
It's cool. It's honestly really cool. I was really intrigued with the character of Book and seeing where they're going with him, because especially like with the way that his culture mixes science with belief and religion. I don't want to say religion.
It's more spirituality.
Spirituality.
Yeah.
And the way that his race does that, I think, is so cool. And it's different than
Star Trek.
It's
a species, Dave, not a race.
Well, species. Okay, fine. But what? Tomato, tomato. But like.
No, David, it's not.
I
am of the Mexican race and of the human species.
The human species.
I'm not the Mexican from Planet Mexican. I wonder what it's like in Planet Mexican. Burritos every day. Burritos are- That's racist, David. I can't believe you said that. Go ahead.
I thought it. But I'm really happy that this season of Discovery, you realize that this past season, they've been introducing new elements to Star Trek that we've never seen before.
They're blazing new trails.
They're blazing new trails. And this is something that me and you have been harping about that they have to do with new Star Trek.
We want something new.
New. Give us something new.
Yeah.
And they've been able to actually do that with the new technology and the new aliens that are showing up.
Just the setting where we're at now.
Oh, yeah.
The 900 years in the future.
And I'm like you. I really do hope that we do more with Book's planet. because there's a lot of ground you could cover in just around his species.
Look at the new catchphrases we're getting. You know, hit it.
Hit it is pipe, though.
I mean, this is all new things, Dave. I mean, if this was Planet Mexican, I'd be like, orale. That would be my. If I was a captain of a starship, I'd be orale, wait. Every time I do an order, I give an order, like when we go to warp 5.5, captain, orale, wait.
Orale, wait.
Yeah, so the whole scenario with Burnham, Book, and the Discovery taking an observational stance, I thought was very much the classic way Star Trek heroes break the rules. They bend their orders. That's how you do it, Burnham. You bend your orders. You don't disobey. You bend them, which is, you know, the captain's prerogative. And having Dittmer take Book's ship, a non-Federation ship, that's a Kirk maneuver.
That's a Kirk maneuver. I was laughing at that because I'm going, yeah, I could see that would be like an old-fashioned Star Trek thing. Now, here's the thing. I know that Saru probably, I don't know if they're going to cover it, but I know Saru and Vance are probably going to come to disagreements about that maneuver. Yeah. But you know what? Vance can't say anything because Book's ship is not a Federation class starship.
Yeah, but at the same time, look at that ending. Osira is looking at it as Federation involvement. Yeah. So I don't think Saru will be reprimanded because at the end of the day, the Federation never sits by why people are wiped out, unless it has to do with the Prime Directive.
Yeah, and also we got to understand that Saru is still a... Whether or not we as the audience understand this, Saru is just getting into the captain's seat.
Yeah, he's still trying to figure out his catchphrase.
That. And he's also trying to figure out, you know, little tricks that the captains could do. I mean, only, just as you said, that's a Captain Kirk maneuver. Yeah. Captain Kirk would have actually done that. And Captain Kirk could get away with it because it's Captain Kirk.
That's right. All right, Dave, we're running out of time. So give me your final thoughts in 30 seconds or less and your RMD score.
30 seconds or less. I really like this episode. Again, Discovery has continued to shell out good episode after good episode. There's not even a lull in this season that I can pinpoint and say, oh, that was like a little dip, and then they picked it back up.
Right.
It's been constant, like a really good progression going up. And honestly, this has me really excited to see what the next episode is, which I believe is the part one of a two-parter.
Yeah.
So this is the first, the next episode's going to be kind of like a big milestone episode for the season, and I'm really excited to see that with a lot of the stuff they introduce in this episode, particularly with Georgiou. That's the highlight for me is Georgiou and Colbert. Their scenes for me were the most engaging among the entire episode. Score for this episode, I'm going to give this a 89. That's what I gave.
89?
Yeah.
You are out of your mind.
I'm going to give it an 89 solely because I don't want to put too much.
David, are you a critic or an idiot? That was a little harsh, Dave. I'm sorry.
No, it's true though. It's true.
Okay. Last episode you gave it a 92 because there was no Georgiou.
There's no Georgiou.
And now this week they gave you Georgiou and literally brought everything to the forefront.
I say, I'm thinking that basically the reason why I'm giving these scores is because I'm hurt, Mike. I'm still healing.
Oh my God. Okay, 89%.
89.
Send hate mail to David, please. All right, so for me, everything worked and clicked in this episode, bringing a lot of the elements that they have been working on all season and bringing them together. And not just the overt narrative, but also the things that are being worked within the subtext and thematically as well. Everything was brought to a head in this episode. If this was a mid-season finale and we went off to winter break, I would feel perfectly great with where we're at. So I'm going to give this episode a 96%. On the RMD score. This does bring us to an end. I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.